This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
UFC 217 delivers the implausible, the improbable, and the seemingly impossible in what might be the greatest UFC card in history. We'll discuss whether or not it is. George St. Pierre returns after 4 years, becomes the fourth man to win titles in two different weight classes in a fight that doesn't make it to the fourth round. The feud between TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt reaches a climax, and the Team Alpha Male Exile regains the bantamweight title. Rose engages in mental warfare by completely avoiding it outside of the cage and channeling it inside of the cage. And we have a new women's strawweight champion, and we are joined in studio by George St. Pierre's second ever opponent. Justin Bruckman hangs out with us to talk UFC 217. George, and where we go from here with the UFC, as so much happened this weekend, we should dive right in. But first, I'd like to introduce our guest, Justin Bruckman. As I mentioned, the second opponent that George St. Pierre ever faced in it was a UCC, is that right? Which became TKO?
UCC, yeah, it's TKO now, but it was UCC back then, yeah, many years ago.
That's crazy. It was, I believe, was it 14 years ago I saw, or 15 years ago? 15 years ago.
I try not to think about it, but yeah, probably probably something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And I mean, that gives us kind of a good look at the evolution of George. I mean, you've seen George at his very primitive state to where he is now. So I think we'll dive into that as we talk about what, again, I thought was the implausible, a guy with a four-year layoff coming back and looking as good as George did, new weapons in his toolbox, confident as ever, able to regain, gain another championship under his belt.
Yeah, I think a lot of people doubted him, and my response was, if anyone's going to do it, it's GSP, and I think he just showed it because of that martial arts mentality he likes to bring in. And just seeing how he evolves, from what I understand, like in that time off, he was still obsessed with training. He was still obsessed with learning. I think he looked good. I felt his conditioning was that big issue, and I'm going to be guilty of it. I had a parlay on it. And with this parlay, I had TJ Dillashaw and I had George St. Pierre. I panicked at the second round, so I ended up cashing my bet out at the end of the second round.
Oh, wow, look at you.
So I lost half of what I should have earned based on chickening out and not trusting GSP.
Oh, were there live odds in between rounds two and three that you saw?
No, what was happening, it's the bet site that I use. Like any time during the fights, the cash out value changes.
Right.
So you can cash out at any point. And I was like, oh man, GSP looks tired. He's getting tagged. He doesn't look good. So I cashed out. And I let me down, man. I let the Canadian fans down. I didn't trust GSP there for a second.
No. I mean, what did you think, Justin? I mean, what did you glean from seeing George back in the octagon after all these years?
He said he was coming in with some new skills, and I think he backed it up. His first round was beautiful. It was typical stiff jab and like nice timing. Second round, it appeared that he was slowing down a little bit. But I think, like anyone who's taken some time off, he was a bit excited in the first, and probably just relax a little more in the second, more than he did slow down, you know. And then, he timed him beautifully in the third. So I thought he did fantastic. I'm a huge fan, so you know I'm pretty biased. But for anyone to come in and do that to Bisping, because Bisping is near impossible to get out of there. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
You can have bias. I mean, you were in the cage with him. You can be a fan. I mean, the guy's a pioneer. You're a pioneer of Canadian mixed martial arts. He's a pioneer of Canadian mixed martial arts. It's okay to support the countrymen.
Justin was even the champion at that point.
Yeah, that's right. But you were fighting up a weight class at that time. Is that right?
Back then, there was only like three weight classes anyway. So I weighed in at 169. Like I didn't cut weight. I was eating pizza the night before. That's how I got on the scale. It was after that fight that I went down to 155 because everyone was so big compared to me, right? When I met George and realized how big and strong and a welterweight actually is, I knew it was time to go and do something else. So.
And you beat David Luazo, who was a middleweight, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we fought around 180 or something like that back then. Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that must have been that was the Wild West back then in terms of mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
But I look back at some of those cards you guys fought on. Like you look back and you see who was on the card, and you guys were main event. It's crazy to see all of the guys who made it to the UFC from that time. Yeah. Like you don't even expect it because you don't know the lineage and the history of these guys. But look back at some of these old UCC cards and to see some of the fighters. I want to say Rich Franklin was there a lot of times with you guys. Sean Sherk was with you guys. Like. A lot of big talent came out of the Canadian MMA circuit.
Yeah, Pulver and Ludwig and all sorts of guys. Jeremy Horn, lots of guys fought on those shows.
Jeremy Horn's fought on every show.
A lot of the Canadians, like Hominick and Stout and all those guys as well. Like they were kind of second generation, but they came a little bit after.
Well, the gap between the UCC and the UFC 15 years ago wasn't that big anyways. I mean, the UFC was just getting traction. I mean, they were on pay-per-view, which is where I guess people wanted to be. But, you know, it wasn't what it is now.
Yeah. There's so much competition in other events and promotions all over the world now, right? Where back then there was small ones throughout the U.S., but like that, Stéphane Patry really made the UFC something big. Like it was, you know, it was pride the UFC, and then probably UCC. Like back then, they were the biggest shows.
And yeah, now, Stefan was George's manager at the time too.
Yeah, he was big. I was going to ask Justin, like TKO is back. Mm-hmm. I know you have a few fighters. You had Lindsay and Manchild fighting on their cards. How have you seen it change now in Canada from when you fought with Stefan running the shows?
You know what? He's a fantastic promoter, and you know, it's one thing that's changed. Like fair match, the matchmaking's always good. You know, I always feel there's going to be some home cooking, but that's just the way it goes when you're traveling to Quebec to fight. But you know, everyone's treated well, and the promotion, the one thing that's changed is the technology over the years. Like when we showed up, everything was on VHS, you know, and now it's like the lights, action camera, like it's the production at the TKO events is really, really good.
Yeah. It looks good.
And the talent level all around, everyone's amazing now. You know?
Yeah. Even the young kids, like I was following that, the one kid
Laramie.
Yeah. The Laramie brothers were doing really
very,
well.
They're very good.
But then
there's
another kid that, Striker, very, I think he main evented. I think he actually fought Manchild last.
No, Manchild fought Laramie last time. You're talking about the two other brothers from Quebec, the Jourdains.
Yes, Jourdains.
Yes, they're very good.
Very
as well.
Talented, man. Yeah. So fun to watch.
You got
watch.
Keith Lee coming up there as well, Kevin's younger brother.
Yeah, he's good as well.
Yeah, absolutely. He's 3-1 now. So it's interesting to see a lot of these guys. And I mean, Keith Lee has now moved out to Vegas. I wouldn't be shocked to see him on the Dana White Contender Series in the near future.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Justin mentioned technology. What did you guys think of like playback for the UFC was able to now look back at some of the
work.
No, it didn't work.
No, it didn't work. It was useless.
I think the rule is they can't
overturn the decision.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
the problem
they can
is
you.
Here's the problem when you look at the Olynyk fight versus Curtis Blaydes. So they determine that basically it wasn't a hit to a ground opponent, that it was legal, but the refs already called the fight off. So they have to give Blaydes a TKO win when really there was nothing done. Like that wasn't a TKO. It was nothing. It was a non-event. So they can have as much instant replay as they want, but if the referees don't know what they're doing because this guy's calling the fight off when really it's under review.
But was that based on Olynyk saying he didn't want to continue, though? Right? Because I think he said something.
Well, I doubt it. Well,
based on the language,
but
he said he didn't want to continue, but he was taking some shots.
And that's
before,
a risk. That's a risk because that happened with Weidman and Mousasi as well. If the fighter milks it and nothing's happening, they're looking at the replay, you're risking getting a loss.
See, I was mentioning to Aaron before, like, I find it hard, like, especially when a guy takes a hard low blow or, you know, and a shot, an unintentional shot to the head. As a fighter, you want to continue. You have the crowds yelling and cheering and booing and screaming, like, come on. And if you say no, you know everyone's going to erupt and hate you for it, especially if you're a big name on the card. But it doesn't make the fight fair at that point. And I think sometimes it's better to not ask the fighter if he wants to continue. And I saw it at the Last Glory event. We had a kid who was dominating the first round and a half, ended up taking a cheap shot from behind. And as soon as that shot happened, the fight totally changed momentum. The other guy took over, and he ended up losing a decision. So he showed hard. He continued the fight, but he lost at the end of the day because of that. Maybe the doctor should have stopped it. Right? Maybe don't let the fighter decide necessarily if he wants to continue all the time.
Yeah, and I think
it's still a work in progress.
It's still,
but the fighter's
still
gonna
so
be
young.
Pissed. Would I want to continue? Would you want to continue? For sure. But
you know, at the end of the day, it's the job of the referees and the doctors to have the fighter's safety in mind, right? So maybe more of it should be put into their hands instead of asking the fighters. If you made it to that level, you're always going to say yes.
And what do you guys think of the Walt Harris, that being a DQ? Because I think if the ref doesn't get in there, I mean, the onus is kind of like that's probably a no contest.
Oh, with the late kick?
Yeah. I mean, I know these guys are heavyweights, but if you're the ref, you know, you can't rely on you yelling stop when you're mic'd up and you're at Madison Square Garden for them to be able to hear what you're saying.
And that's the thing. They're playing that stuff back in slow motion. Man, in real time, that's like, that's a split second. You hear him say stop, but that. You've got that kick chamber and it's already leaving your hip. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. It was a gray area. I know I'm going to keep swinging until someone pulls me off. That's just me, right? And that's what there's 20,000 people screaming, right? And you're in a fist fight.
On the line.
You know what I mean? It's going down quick.
Well, you're a martial arts instructor.
Yeah.
So when you're teaching people, whatever, any different technique, do you tell them, like, if we say stop, you just finish what you're doing and then stop? That's how a lot of instructors teach people. I mean, I'm not talking about inspiring, but in terms of just
protect yourself at all times, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's your job as a competitor to be aware that, like, man, don't turn your back. You know what I mean? Like, I know you got kicked, kneed on the low blow or whatever, but like, and you got to get the ref's attention, whatever else. But I'm not turning my back on anyone. Yeah. I'm not dropping my hands.
Like, especially at least face him and put your hands out to wave.
Because
off.
He turned his back before the ref yelled time, right? So then that's again, the onus is kind of on the fighter there.
Yeah,
yeah, it's an interesting call. That one I wasn't as disappointed with the illegal head kick. Stoppage, just calling it a DQ, as I was the Olynyk and Blades one. That one just made no sense to me.
Also,
but
because Olynyk was your
pick. That's true. But Olynyk was going to lose that fight. It looked like. I mean, he was getting beaten up.
That was
up
your
by
last
Blades.
Year's pick that we had on.
Blades' striking has improved so much.
Yeah, he looked good.
Yeah, it's just when he first came into the UFC, he was training at like a high school wrestling gym. Like he was working with his old wrestling instructor, and his striking was just so primitive. And now that he's working with a good camp. It's really, you can see how elevated that part of his game has gotten.
Well, we're talking about good striking. What about OSP?
OSP has had a great year. I mean, if you look at his year, he's fought four times in the last 12 months. His only loss is a split decision to Volkan Ozdemir, who's getting the next shot at light heavyweight.
And he took this fight on 10 weeks' notice, I believe, didn't he?
Yeah, and most people thought he beat Ozdemir.
Was it 10 weeks, or was it shorter than that?
It was less than that, I think.
Less than that.
Because Cummins got pulled.
Yeah, OSP was like 2 weeks he took it on.
Two or three weeks.
And he was losing. I have no doubt. And you could tell he saw.
I had it around a piece.
It was close, but I mean, I thought he was losing slightly.
Yeah, a lot of people said that
But you could see physically he was a little softer than he normally was, and he probably had to cut a little more weight because he wasn't in a camp. But you know, athletes at that level, they're always scary. Like anything can happen. He gets that one kick off and. Especially from the southpaw, you can never see that coming.
No, I just love it because people are starting to kick more. I just find a lot of MMA fighters always focus on their boxing. Like, get those kicks flying.
Look at TJ.
Right? Yeah. That's why I picked TJ to win, because of the versatility in his striking. It's a long weapon. A guy who knows how to use it. If I'm going to go into war and I'm going to go into battle, my first weapon, I'm going to have a spear. I'm going to use my longest weapon. I'm going to keep you away from me. So use your kicks.
You could see the difference, though, in the corners. Like, Team Alpha Male, when they were with Garbrandt, they're like, you can do this, man. Yeah. Shooting from Dwayne Ludwig calms his guy down, says, listen, you know, don't worry about these guys. Here's what you got to do. We got to make this a brand new fight. Go forward, use your kicks. And he was able to, in a composed manner, tell his fighter what to do and then immediately earned him success in that second round.
Well, I mean, Garbrandt's team, they're all seem to be younger kids as well.
I don't think Buchholz is that much younger than Dwayne Ludwig.
Well, he's got to be, what, early 30s compared to in his 40s? I mean,
probably. No, he's not. I don't think Buchholz is early 30s, but yeah, there's probably a couple of years between them. And Dwayne's like retired, whereas Buchholz just
retired,
fought, right?
Business owner. I don't know. I just think they're like, even the end of the first round when you saw Cody, that type of personality, he gave TJ the finger.
Yeah.
You know, as he almost knocked him out. And
you know,
it's just different philosophies.
It's mental maturity, and it's also a relationship between coach and athlete as well, right? Like. A good corner man isn't screaming at you. He's having a conversation to offer you advice.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe making suggestions. You analyze the round as it goes down. Then you come back to the corner. We sit down. We have a conversation. I calm you down. And I send you back out. And 9 times out of 10, those are ones going to come out on top, right? It's good. Fight with passion, but don't let it take over the fight on you. You know?
What kind of coach would you say you are? I mean, I like having a fighter that I could joystick. We call them the joystick fighter.
Yeah.
But I can command and they go. But there's some fighters who... you know, just have to do their own thing.
Yep.
What's your kind of style with coaching?
I think I like a combination of the two, you know?
Like when you want to be picked up, you want to be screamed at? Or
And every athlete's a little bit different, but like my two best fighters, every single time, if they come back after the first, how you doing? You having a good time? Yeah. We actually
keep
talk.
It light.
Like,
keep it light.
Yeah, and just enjoy. Okay, let's try this. Let's try that. So many corner men think it's about them. You know what I mean? They're out there screaming instructions and losing their mind. How is my athlete going to stay calm if I'm losing my cool?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We have to be able to talk, right? So you get the point. And I'm just, like I said, I'm just making suggestions. At the end of the day, it's your face on the line out there. So you got to do what you feel is right. If I'm telling you to do something and you don't think it's in your best interest, then don't do it. You're the one that's getting hit in the head.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
But it is nice. But I do have a couple guys in jiu-jitsu as well where I'm like, okay, now do this. and they believe in you 100% and they'll do it and it works. But we're also wrong as coaches as well, right? Like, just because we tell you to do it doesn't necessarily work, right?
Yeah. So I'm never wrong, Justin.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm always right. Speak for yourself here.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of which, you just released the video. You cracked the Stephen Thompson code.
Yeah, I did a little video for it.
I think you were getting tired of people not trusting in your instincts.
Yeah,
you
wanted to get that out there. Yeah, I had to put a video out. This is pretty cool. I did a calf breakdown that responded well. I guess the MMA and UFC community responded well to it. So I did a random breakdown on how to beat Wonder Boy Thompson. Very simple, and I mean, I just love, I usually don't read comments, but for this one, I always find it fun. And
don't read comments.
No, but I thought it was funny, the one, what people say, oh yeah, it says easier said than done, buddy, and I was just like, okay, guys, relax. I've done it, I fought guys with that, but, because they were saying how a lot of people felt Masvidal did the right strategy to do it, I said, no, he was still missing out on continuing coming forward. They're missing that second combination, that third combination, that confidence to keep coming forward. You're not going to knock Wonder Boy out with one shot. You're not going to knock him out with one combination. It's going to take you to come 2, 3, 4 before you try to close him up against the cage. Unless he's against the cage, don't even try.
And you showed good points of contact also that would be beneficial, like where you should aim target
your
leg kicks. You
have to touch him. You have to touch him before you hit him. And you can't just hit him with that one big blow shot because his distance, his movement is way too good. You have to set things up with him. Like the way I say it, your double jab right hand might be just to close the first distance. Yep. And then maybe the second combination just touches him. And then the third time he ends up being backed up against the cage. And maybe that's when you get to do it. Is it difficult? Yes. Is the first round going to be the worst first round of your life? Probably, because you're going to be chasing him. You're going to be running him. But round 2, round 3, once you start getting confidence, moving inside with your defense, maybe he does. Because for me, it doesn't hit that hard. I mean, it's good timing, good precision. I'm not overly scared of the power he would have. You gotta have that confidence in closing.
You might end up getting a very friendly phone call from Stephen Thompson.
Well,
and I say that because he's just always friendly.
Man,
Joe, why'd you have to post that video too? I don't really appreciate that, but that's okay, man. You know, people think they can beat me, that they can try.
Nice.
He's the nicest guy on the planet.
Okay.
Stephen Thompson's like,
I'll take the video down. Then.
He's a martial artist. Like, I love the way that guy fights. You know, he doesn't take a lot of damage. Everything's calculated. And like I said, he's accurate. It doesn't look like he's got a ton of sting on it, but if it's placed nicely, it doesn't have to, right? He is really hard to cut off, though. If it was in a ring, it'd be different because maybe you'll have a little chance. But when you're in the octagon, it's cornering guys like that's hard. But totally, you gotta take the risk.
The corner's
and go at
not there, but you still gotta track the guys.
Yeah. Did you feel Brunson did the same thing against Machida? Did he have the right strategy? I mean, Machida isn't the same Machida as he was 10 years ago.
But I think Machida will stand a little bit more than Thompson.
Yeah. And he doesn't have that lateral, like that side
the lateral, because Thompson's dangerous because he moves laterally so quick.
He switches all the time.
And his fighting experience came from World Combat League, which was a circle ring. So that guy could circle and run and move around. It's so hard to hit. Yeah. But you can't chase no matter what. There's a difference between chasing someone and controlling the center of the octagon.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, I mean, you could hit once and he moves. You just got to learn to stay right in front of them. Like, there's a way to do it. Is it harder in an octagon? Yes, but there is still a way to do it.
Well, all that said, Thompson looked great. Paulo Costa, Paulo Borrachinha, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, he's the talk.
Yeah, the eraser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Johnny Hendricks loses again. It might be the end of the road for old Johnny.
Yeah, I think so.
But I mean, you can't take anything away from Hendricks losing to a guy like Costa. I think he's the top Brazilian prospect in the sport right now. I mean, you got Marlon Moraes fighting this weekend, and he's certainly worth a look.
Yeah.
You're grimacing when I say
no,
that.
No,
there's some other guys you have in mind.
I think when you find someone that Costa can't bully, then I think it's going to hold.
Yeah.
Who do you think could do it?
He needs to be tested.
Off the top of my head, I can't even think. These guys that are so big and strong, and he's crazy athletic.
Like,
and
what about someone like Rockhold?
Exactly.
Or like Jacare.
Yeah,
or
like
Romero.
A hard wrestler. Yeah. But could like a striker deal with him? Like a Rockhold?
Absolutely. You can see what he does. He's pretty raw. He's just explosive.
Simple power kicks.
Yeah, like if he touches you, he's going to do damage, right?
He's
but
huge.
If you have someone who's got...
Probably the best body in MMA, too, that guy.
He's a handsome fella.
He's a handsome guy.
You said it, Justin. I'm not going to agree. I'm not going to disagree.
He's no Valtellini, but he's all right.
He's a stud, man. He's definitely marketable. How old is he?
He's young.
He's young. He's like in his early 20s. Yeah.
He's built like a 26 house, man.
Yeah. Oh, he's a truck, and he's going to do damage. But if you have someone who's disciplined against him, I think
someone maybe a little more explosive.
Yeah,
and Johnny's just so small for the division in terms of his height and stature.
He's soft, man. You can't question the guy's heart, but he's missing something outside of the cage, and he's not going to get it back now, you know.
He went on this rant during the weigh-ins. It was very strange. He was acting very peculiar, in a peculiar fashion.
I think he's past his prime now, obviously.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah,
he
sure.
had his huge run. What, like, with his fights with GSP, like, he had his career. I mean, you just don't want to see someone like that stay a little too long.
Yeah. And,
like I was saying, he has a lot going on in his personal life, and that can really translate to your performance in the cage. Or can translate to your performance in any job you have, not necessarily as a fighter. Yeah. It's like, if you're going through internal strife in other facets of your life, it can carry over.
If you don't want to put that little bit of extra work in your diet, I mean, it maybe not the sport right now to do it, right? Everyone's doing it. Everyone's cutting weight. You have to be disciplined in your diet. If you're not, I mean, I'm sure he has enough money now to get his meals made for him. It's not a big deal. Yeah. I'm sure he still trains hard, but
it's
no excuse to me.
It's what you do outside the gym that, especially the older you get, you know, you've really got it. It's your off season. It's your rest between rounds. These are the things that are important. Anyone can go smashing their head against the wall in the training session. Yeah. It's what you do when you leave, man. Are you doing your yoga? Are you eating properly? Are you sleeping? Are you getting your water? Like, all these things. It's discipline outside the gym as well, right? And that's the stuff that makes the difference between a good fighter and a champion.
And even those martial arts, like, most people, we know those people who would only train for fight camps.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in between, they're drinking, they're smoking, they're eating whatever the heck they want, but they only train. But someone like George, why we see success is it's an everyday life. It's a lifestyle.
Yep,
it's a training.
Absolutely.
Maybe Johnny Hendricks, I don't know how his lifestyle is, but
he talked about how he loves to eat.
Yeah.
And
you got to love to eat.
That's a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
He owned a steakhouse. I mean, like, you
that
know,
went under, didn't it?
Yes,
someone
it sure
said it
did.
Under.
Like I said, it's part of that kind of stuff outside the octagon that can distract you and get in your head.
And everyone thinks owning a restaurant is super easy to do.
It's probably the hardest job ever.
I'm like the least. But I mean, I know so many people are like, oh, I know the restaurant. They don't understand the many different things that go behind a business, one and a restaurant business. The
any
hours.
Business, that one is stressful, man.
Yeah,
like,
the hours,
nonstop.
The time.
That's the last thing I would want to do is own a restaurant.
No, thanks.
A hard pass on that. So Rose Namajunas beats Joanna Jędrzejczyk. This to me was the big surprise of the evening. I mentioned to you last week, I thought the odds were should have been a lot closer than they were. I always thought Rose was a very talented fighter and could beat Joanna. I just didn't think she'd beat her like this.
Mm.
Standing up, first round, striking. You know, I thought if she was going to make it a gritty fight, get in there, try to pull for subs, even try to pull guard, she'd have a lot of success. But after watching that fight, I think that if there was a rematch, I would side with Rose. Like, I think Rose
really
has kind of cracked the code here.
No, I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't. Joanna, like, you can grind her. She gets meaner and meaner as the fight goes on. When she gets tired, like, and starts to warm up, then she really starts to light people up. I think Rose had the right idea, and she was patient, but she still came out strong. And I think she hit the first punch. She hit her with her right hand. Was it right hand? When she went down the first time,
left hook. I thought
the
it was
left
like a
hook
lunging
is what
left
finished
hook.
Her.
That's finished her.
There, she hit her. Her confidence went up, and I think Joanna, she started to panic a little bit. Like, and you could see her combinations were a little bit sloppy compared to what they were. And
do you think it was Rose fighting well, or just Joanna having an off night, or couldn't get her rhythm?
I think Rose is amazing, and she's so young that every time you see her, she improves, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's the thing about youth in the sport is people can. I mean, like Curtis Blaydes, I thought that Olenek was just going to, his experience was going to be better. He'd have better striking. He'd be able to sub him from the bottom. Had a lot of different ways that he could beat that code, but you saw Blaydes, because he's so young, just he's getting exponentially better every time he gets into the octagon.
The other thing, too, was they were saying, Joanna was saying she did a 13-week training camp. Like, what the hell for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For, like, no. I don't know. So maybe she came in burnt out. And, hey, at the end of the day, you get punched in the face. Like, you can have the perfect plan, perfect training. You get hit in the jaw, and you get loosened up. That's what happens. Like, it's a fist fight. Someone's going down.
And she didn't make any excuses afterwards. When we were
talking
to her, she said, I had the best camp I've had. I had a good weight cut.
It wasn't an excuse. Overconfidence, maybe, mentally.
She said she just didn't feel like, when she watched it back, she just said, I felt like I wasn't even there. Like, I felt like that wasn't me in the cage. Probably just had an off day.
I find it refreshing, though, to see Rose as the champion.
I like it.
We're seeing a lot of this new, let me be the heel, let me be this bad person with Colby Covington now, you know, being publicly out there, the Conor McGregor stuff. So it's nice to see a champion who first thing she says, she's like, I just want everyone to be happy. I want everyone to be nice.
I've got to go home
nice
and look at my tomato farm.
I just want to be nice to people now. So it's a nice, refreshing look to the sport to have someone who's
good-looking,
sweet, positive.
George was like that for years. He's like the martial artist like polite, well spoken, and people didn't buy it. Like they actually hated him for it because they didn't think it was real. Yeah. And now you listen to that crowd the other night; they love him.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? He's bad. Because, like people, he was missed, and you know it's
and
for
the,
George.
The sport needs him. Sorry, yeah, the sport needs him. They need people like that. Like he's a draw, and he's a positive draw. It's not. He's not
relying on his mouth to sell tickets.
He's not the sports entertainment part of it. He's the athlete and the martial arts part of it.
Yeah.
I think that's huge.
Well, before the fight, there was an argument about who was the best ever. Is there still one? I mean, I think George's resume now speaks for itself. A lot of the guys that were in that conversation have been popped for, you know, performance-enhancing drugs or, you know, outside of the octagon problems. I think George kind of stands alone now, in my opinion, at least. I don't know who else is in that conversation.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Like, Demetrius Johnson, just from a technical standpoint, I could watch that guy all day. But George, you look at his numbers, but what is it, not 18 or 19 and 2. He went back and raced both of his losses. He came back after a four-year layoff, you know what I mean, and then crush a guy like, not crush, but dominate a guy like Bisping, which is a hard task. And he got to fight me, which is pretty cool.
Damn
so,
right.
Yeah, he should be honored. But I really think he is the greatest. Like, and he changed the sport and how things are done as well, right? Like, it's not he's not just winning punches. He came out technical.
I was saying that last week that people say, "Oh, George has been away from the game. It's evolved. He's been away for 4 years." I said the game evolved because of George St. Pierre because he was so good at everything, and everybody else was like, "Oh, I can't just be a striker anymore. Yep. It's just not going to work."
Yeah, the big question for me now is who should he fight next? That's the exciting part,
like,
right?
Like
because
he wasn't happy.
He wasn't happy at 185.
Yeah.
It seemed like he wants to move down.
Well, like I mentioned to you last week, you know, they're now saying, oh, it's going to be Whittaker, but Whittaker's probably going to headline that card in February. It's in Australia.
I heard he wasn't. Someone was saying he would not be ready.
I spoke
for
to him over the weekend.
You got the inside?
Yeah, so I've got the inside. And he says he wants to headline that card. But I said, like, would you be willing to defend the interim belt? And he's like, well, why would I defend the interim belt? Then what's the point of all these belts? And I was thinking, well, the point is that George isn't flying to Australia in 3 months, pal. Sorry, you know, like it's... George isn't going to turn around and fight again in 3 months. George once took a fight that he considered to be a quick turnaround, and it was like 5 or 6 months after his last fight.
He
doesn't do that.
Fights, no.
Yeah, he doesn't do that. Especially
I agree
at this
with
age.
That, though. That's my philosophy, too.
Yeah. So I think that what we'll probably see is Whittaker against Rockhold in Australia, and the winner of that fight would be in line to fight George, but you could also see George just relinquish the belt and do what George wants to do. It's, you know,
that's what I see happening.
Yeah, George wants super fights.
Yeah. If fights at all, who knows what he's thinking right now? He went and did it. He had a good night. He performed well, and he made some money. He might be done. Who knows? Right?
Yeah, he could walk away. I saw an article on that this morning that it was Kenny Florian actually said he wouldn't be surprised if that was George's last fight.
Yeah, no, I listened just on the way here. I listened to Anik and Florian. There's a lot of talk. People are thinking he goes down to fight Woodley, which I think is a super tough fight for him.
Oh, absolutely.
But there's also options. I think the ultimate goal would be Conor McGregor, I would think.
You know, I put together a poll. I'm gonna read you the results. I'm going to pull it up right now. It's who do you think would be the easiest opponent for Conor McGregor of the champions?
Of the champions, who would be the easiest?
Yeah, you guys take a guess. So it's either Max Holloway, Tony Ferguson. I consider Tony Ferguson the interim champion, so he's a champion. Woodley or GSP? What do you think was the
easiest
answer? It got over 1,000 votes.
I would go Holloway, to be honest.
It's a tough question, right?
You shouldn't even throw easy in that equation.
No,
like,
easiest for him. I mean, none of these guys are easy
no,
matchups.
They're
champions.
Saying, I guess probably Holloway based on
size. Yeah.
Like if he went against St. Pierre, he's going to get annihilated. I don't care what anyone says.
Yeah, the wrestling is
going to get crushed.
Way too different level. Yeah. The size, his jab, his power. Yeah.
So 49% Holloway. So he was considered the easiest, followed by 33% Ferguson, 8% Woodley, 10% GSP. So you guys both, I actually think it's Ferguson.
Based on the wrestling?
Based on just how easy he is to hit. Like, I think Connor's one of those guys, if he hits you, you know, the strategy that Conor would have to implement against Ferguson is go out there, keep it on the feet. If you knock him down, don't go to the ground with him. Keep getting to stand up and hope to get the KO shot. But Holloway then versus Holloway now, You're comparing apples to oranges. Holloway's won 13 or 14 in a row.
I changed my mind. I think Ferguson's probably a better match. Oh,
that was easy.
Yeah.
I'll pat myself on the back for that one.
No, and I would never, ever bet against Max Holloway.
But you've also got to consider that in this situation, Connor has to cut the 45 if he's going to fight Holloway. And I'm looking at more of like
a size thing, right? More than anything.
Yeah. But the size, really, unless you really start throwing the wrestling in, the size isn't that big of a deal. You know what I mean? Like, it is, but it's not compared to style-wise, right? I mean, that 10, 15 pounds difference doesn't come into play when you're just throwing hands and kicks as much as it is if you're
gonna, when someone's leaning against you on the cage.
Absolutely.
Woodley versus Connor would be interesting too, even though Woodley, I think, got 8%. But
I don't think that would happen. That's the worst.
But Woodley, over in 2 minutes.
Of the four guys, though, I'd say Woodley's the chinniest.
He's not going to get hit.
No,
he's going to blast through you.
Imagine Woodley running at
that's
you.
That's true. Especially if you're supposed to be a 55er.
You couldn't stop. He couldn't stop him from taking him down. It would be a bloody mess.
Yeah.
The same thing with George. If George puts you on your back, you're 155er. He puts you on your back, you're dead.
Bisping
can throw some elbows.
Bisping's a 185er.
Yeah, he is soft in the face.
Yeah,
he's going to bleed every time.
Bother him with some elbows on the bottom. Yeah,
that was Bisping's strategy. And
it worked.
Kudos to George's corner because they said, finish this if you can. It's third round. You don't want the doctors to check that cut in between rounds. Do what you can to finish it. And to George's credit, he did just that.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Do you guys think that was the best card ever?
I mean, I'm sure
you've seen a lot of them.
It was pretty good. I can't think of anything right now, but it's because it's so fresh in my mind. It was fantastic. I watched that St. Pierre fight, man, and my heart was pounding, and I never get like that.
It was up there.
It was exciting, man. That's how I wanted it to go, because he just deserves it. You know what I mean? I just love that guy. He's such a great martial artist and nice person, and he just does, that's how you're supposed to act. And I wanted him to come back and prove that, you know, that you don't need to trash talk and this, and you know, and just be a good martial artist and be good at your sport. Without that, should sell it, you know.
Yeah.
And he just deserves that. I loved it, man. I thought it was a great card.
I just thought that it had it all. The card had it all.
But is it the best though?
I think so.
All time.
I think it is.
I mean, a lot of my friends who are like those UFC historians, they were talking UFC 166.
Which was that?
I can't even remember. That's why I'm asking Aaron. Because Aaron will know.
I'm terrible with the numbers, but I'll know once I see it.
It's comparable. You hear all these guys throwing out numbers, but someone said it's probably very comparable to 166.
Velasquez Dos Santos 3. Okay. It doesn't stick out in my head. I just remember Cain destroying Dos Santos in that fight. Cormier beating Nelson by decision. Melendez beating Sanchez. That was an unbelievable fight.
That was a good fight, yeah.
Gonzaga, Sean Jordan, Dodson, Daryl Montague. Come on.
We're not talking
about fights with the kind of gravity of the ones that, from this weekend.
Well, I'm going to yell at that
person, if anything, I think UFC 205, you can make a case. Last year with Alvarez and Connor. That card had a lot of big fights.
Was three title fights as well on that.
That was three title fights. You had the Woodley versus Thompson, the first one, which was a great fight.
Yeah, that was.
You had Joanna Carolina, which was a good fight because Joanna, that was the first time Joanna really got tagged in a fight. Yoel versus Weidman with that flying knee.
Yeah.
Pennington upsetting Tate.
Yeah.
That was a good card. You had Khabib beating up Michael Johnson and telling him to give up while he was beating on him.
I love that kid too.
Yeah. Edgar Stevens was a good fight.
What was the card that I think it was Connor? Was it the Connor Nate where we saw Holly Holm also knock out Rhonda?
Wasn't that the same card? I don't think. No, it wasn't.
I
was actually on Jay and Dan's podcast yesterday, and Dan was saying the same thing.
They thought it was the same card.
Yeah, they thought it was the same card.
They were back to back.
I thought it was Holly versus. I remember there being two crazy. The co-main event and the main event were crazy on whatever the Holly Holm Ronda Rousey.
That was Joanna versus.
Was it Misha Tate? Holly Holm.
Misha Tate versus Holm was UFC 200.
And then
Connor
the finals
was,
that. Was Connor. Wasn't
no,
that?
Connor wasn't at 200. Because Connor didn't want to.
No, it wasn't 200, but
it was Misha. I think when Misha beat Holly Holm.
Oh, yes. Misha beat Holm. Well, that's right.
Misha
that was that card.
And then
Nate,
I remember that was
McGregor.
Crazy to me.
That
I remember being
good.
At a bar watching and being crazy.
Thing. I know exactly where I was.
So I messed that up. Nuts. So Dan was actually right, and I was wrong. I thought Misha Holm was 200, but it was Misha Nunes that was 200.
Yeah. So I remember that being exciting, but I can't remember three spectacular fights that we saw. But I remember the co-main event and the main event were crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been 196, I think.
Yeah. But that was crazy. That's the only other time I was that probably excited in recent times.
Yeah, maybe it was 202. I can't remember. These numbers, I always, I'm terrible with this. There's too many of them. And yeah, like you mentioned that one, the 166. I was like,
Yeah, no, that, just because I heard friends talking about it. But that's the only reason I would know, 166. Yeah.
That card, was, again, it just had everything. You had a big upset with Rose, especially how it happened. Dillashaw Garbrandt, there was just so much going on in that fight. And then, of course, George coming back with the layoff and looking how he looked. Then you see a young rising star like Costa and Blades looking how he looked. That crazy Ramos Zahabi knockout was unbelievable.
Yeah,
and then
the spinning,
OSP knockout.
Spinning back elbow.
Yeah. Spinning back elbow after he attempted it seconds before the first
time.
Yeah,
there's always between controversy, knockouts.
Yeah. Aitman was winning that fight, too.
Yeah, he got, man, guys don't understand leg kicks. Like, as soon as Zahabi ate two low kicks, the fight totally changed.
Yeah,
he took
that was
two
in the first round, wasn't it?
I think near the end of the first round, as soon as he ate those hard two low kicks, the fight totally changed for him.
You're like the biggest proponent of leg kicks
ever,
in the world. Yeah.
Ever. Mm-hmm. Not just in the world, ever. All times, pound
time,
for pound.
You got to go back to the Greek gladiators.
Me and Ernesto Hoos, man. Ernesto Hoos was the low kick, Mr. Perfect.
Yeah,
Mr. Low Kicks, man.
Low kick.
I don't think there's very few fighters in the world that use the low kick well. The other person currently now that would probably use a really solid low kick, from kickboxing at least, would be someone, Liam Harrison. He's a guy who likes to really chop down the legs, but very few do it. It's an underrated weapon. I'm really liking these guys and these calf kicks that they're throwing. We saw, we keep seeing that. I'm loving it. People starting to use.
Ben Henderson has been using them for years.
Oh, they've been amazing.
You know, the thing on the low kick as well is people are just winging them. They're not doing them right.
Yeah, you know, once you learn to do them right with timing.
Once you understand the timing, then makes a big difference.
You've
you
been at Bazooka. You've seen it.
I've felt it. It's horrible.
You'll have to teach
last
me.
Last time I was with you, I didn't know. I just sat down. And I didn't know if it was
once you attack those legs, people have no clue what's happening.
I was confused. I didn't know if it was a leg kick or it was because you. The left hook to the guts, but I just knew I needed to take a break.
Could you use it practically? Like if somebody was charging at you, could you throw a leg kick at someone and just
completely? It's the timing on the in, and it all depends. Like in MMA, the way I always tell people, if you're fighting a wrestler, don't lead with your low kick, then you're going to get taken down. They're waiting for it. But a lot of guys don't like to get hit, and the first thing you do, so what I like to use in MMA is more what I call the exit low kick. So I want my opponent to exit. So if I close the distance on them, as soon as they exit away, whether it's a double jab, they move their head back, it leaves the leg right there. As soon as your opponent exits, you take their leg. Every time you'll hit it, whether it's a wrestler, whether it's a striker, you take their low kick on their exit, you'll hit it most of the time. So, I mean, it's the timing in MMA. People are like, the takedown. If you lead with it, yes, you're going to get taken down. If you throw it as on their exit, you'll be safe.
So one more. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Justin.
And if you time it properly, they can't check it.
Yeah,
that's
no,
too,
that's
right?
When you want to throw it.
Yeah.
They're free low kicks.
If that weight's on the lead foot, then
I spar with you, it's going to be no surprise. If I fight you, I'm going to hit your leg. You will not block one of them.
Yeah.
Because it's the confidence in it, like that I know when to throw it. I'm only going to throw it when I know you can't block it. So that's the key to
and
a
I'm
low
sure
kick,
even
is
if
timing.
You, even if you check it, I'm sure it can't feel great.
Well, then you have to know. Like sometimes I throw a kick because I want you to check it. Sometimes I want you to check. Sometimes so that I can set up my hands after it. Sometimes I want to attack the leg with high shin, low shin, top of the leg, low of the leg. If I kick always close to the knee, it's easier for him to block. If I start kicking high or cutting down my kick, you're not going to be able to block it as easily. So there's so many different ways to throw it that people just need to learn. But it's so effective. So hopefully Zahabi wants to come learn some. I'll go to TriStar one day and I'll show him.
Well, he's in Toronto a lot, actually.
Is he?
And I mentioned to him.
You should come
train. Yeah, I mentioned to him. I spoke to him at the weigh-ins. I said, you should come and then go and train with Joe. And he said, yeah, that would be great.
For sure.
Yeah. So
my friends want to go to TriStar too, so I'm going to might hit up Faras and get there and maybe train with some of their guys in the next few months.
That'd be fun. Montreal's an awesome city. Any excuse to go there. So one other thing I want to touch on from this card before we move forward, Dillashaw. Uriah Faber says he's thinking of unretiring if he was offered a fight. He'd have to consider unretiring if he was offered a fight against TJ. And TJ wants to fight Demetrius Johnson. Now, I personally think if TJ can move down to 125, that would be a real super fight for Demetrius Johnson. That being said, I don't know if it's that much more of an improvement for Demetrius to take that fight rather than Demetrius try to move up to 135 to fight TJ. So
it's true. Who wants the double champion? I guess they both want it.
Yeah, of course.
And at a catch weight, it really wouldn't make sense because then there's no belt on the line at a catch weight, right?
And Dana White's already saying, you know, Demetrius wants us to pay him big money for that fight, but like Demetrius needs to sell pay-per-views. So I think if you offer him a really incentive-laden deal where he gets a big chunk of pay-per-views and they really try to sell that fight, then you know maybe you make that. Maybe you make that happen.
Yeah, Dillashaw will be the name that the name that sells pay-per-view. You know what I mean? It's a shame, but Demetrius Johnson is the best there is, like pound for pound. Like really, he is. And if you watch that guy, he's incredible. But he's 125er, so people don't pay attention. And the opponents, they feed him. Not feed him, that he gets.
He's gone through the
division. They have no star power either,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So if you gave him Dillashaw, that would be the incentive too.
He needs that bad. He needs that talker with him, right?
Yeah.
He needs that someone.
He turned down Dillashaw the first time because Dillashaw wasn't the champion. He didn't.
He also wanted to solidify his record as well,
yeah,
right?
True,
I think now that it's going to open up. But I think Demetrius Johnson should get the choice to move up instead of TJ move down. Just being such a dominant champion, I think he deserves a chance at having two titles in two different weight classes. So I think Demetrius Johnson should get that shot. I don't think a catchweight works, but I'd rather see DJ probably move up to 135.
Yeah, that's possible. You know, I think a lot of the things that Johnson does is because he feels he's being bullied. So he doesn't give in to a lot of the stuff, that pressure that he's put on by the UFC. So, but you know, they I've watched them try to bully him several times on different fights and whatever else, and he stands his ground. That's also one of the reasons I like him. But, it would be nice to see them meet at 130, but then, yeah, what's your incentive then other than financial, right?
So like I had this conversation with Robin Black the other day, and we're talking about this Conor McGregor area, and you being a martial artist yourself, how are you taking it? Do you take it as it's good for the sports because it's getting more eyes on it? Or is it some kind of like, you know what, it's kind of against what we've worked so hard for sometimes? Like, where are you sitting on that?
It's been sports entertainment for a long time now. The ranking systems don't make any sense.
It's done by regional radio reporters.
Yeah.
It really is.
If
you look at who is actually making the rankings,
it's a whole bunch of analysts.
It's like local
come together.
Hawaii radio guys. It's like it's insane.
It's not who deserves a shot. It's who's selling tickets. You know what I mean? That's the truth. Otherwise, So the trash talk and stuff like that, I'm like, it brings attention. It's going to make people more money. You know what I mean? Hopefully what McGregor's done in the last couple of years will up everyone else's paychecks, because your entry level in the UFC is embarrassing. If you
knew
how much you were getting paid, it's the worst.
It's about 5, 8, and 8 now, I think it's the 4.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, you can't
But they do 3 now, 8, 8, and 8, right? A three-way?
No,
it's just 8 and 8. Because someone said they changed, now they have like a performance. They have a win, lose, and a performance.
Oh, well, then that must be an internal thing, because that's not
I
disclosed.
Still think it's terrible to have 50% of your win or lose come by winning or losing 50% of your pay.
Yeah.
I'd rather someone get like, if it's 10 to show, 10 to win, I would rather have, 15 to show, 5 to win.
And that happens with
because
a lot of people that are more established.
These guys are making like, some of the bigger names are making $100,000 to show, $100,000 to win. To win to lose a crappy split decision and lose $100,000, that's a lot of freaking money to lose off of judges' decisions.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I necessarily agree with those big 50-50s, but I remember at first with the UFC was, I think it was like 1,000 to show, 1,000 to win, in the earlier. Not that's probably not even that far off of where we are now.
I fought Loazzo for $250. So.
Yeah. You're seeing guys in Bellator still making $500 and $500 on the other.
Yeah, my first pro fight was $400.
Yeah. But the thing is like people, if you don't want to fight for $8,000, there's 100 guys behind you that'll do it for $5.
They'll do it for half.
Yeah. You know, people want to be on TV. So.
But being a local guy, local North American fighter, if you got offered $3,000, you're like, dang, this money is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you're used to making $200, $300, $400. So when even if the UFC offers you $3,000, like,
it's a huge payout. It's a 10 times.
Yeah. You're like, this is crazy.
No, you better love it, because it's not for the money. You know,
absolutely.
Unless you get to that top level, and even then, like, okay, you're making a couple $100,000 a fight. Your career is only 3 years long. Now what? You know. But going back, the trash talk and the character development and the heel and stuff like that, like I personally don't like it, but I get it because they're selling tickets. Like, you know what I mean? I don't think these guys are intelligent enough to pull it off. The guys who are really good at it, McGregor and Chael Sonnen and Bisping, like I don't know them personally, but I can't imagine they're that bad. You know what I mean? They just know how to get it done.
Yeah, and you create your own opportunities.
You know, at the end of the day, whether you love the athlete or you hate him, you bought a ticket to watch him, right? So you can hate Bisping, but it doesn't matter. You paid $60 for the pay-per-view, whether you love George or hate Bisping. Yeah. It doesn't matter. That's the game.
And I'm sorry, right? but it's the George being a two-division champion resonates a lot more with me than Conor being a two-division champion, because Conor just said, okay, I want a lightweight shot, and they're like, okay, he jumped the queue. I mean, George beat, like, he ran through the welterweight division twice.
Yeah. And it's just sports entertainment, you know what I mean? Who's going to sell the most tickets?
Yeah, that one did. It was the biggest gated MSG ever, Conor versus Alvarez.
But also the credibility. Like, does he deserve to be the middleweight champion?
I don't think people care.
They don't care.
I don't think the average fan cares.
Yeah, but no, see, people didn't think that Bisping deserved to be the middleweight champion, you know what I mean? Like, everyone picks Bisping to lose every single time, and he always pulls it off.
Yeah.
You know? So, but
then, hey, if you're talking, you can back it up. That's where you make your money.
Yeah.
No, he's tough as they come. You know, but McGregor thing, he talked his way into whatever he wanted, you know.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, he's the greatest. I'm like, he hasn't defended a belt.
He hasn't really done any. He's done a lot, but.
He fought tough guys, but each person that he fought was just a little bit better than the last, and they were all handed to him so that they could break into the European market.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And they needed a white Irishman to win a title.
And apparently his documentary he released is one of the highest selling. You know, movie. It was the highest selling almost all time in Ireland.
Wow, good for him.
All time.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. Exactly. Yeah.
All
get your
time.
Money,
yeah, get your money. Good for him. Like,
he clearly works hard, and he is gifted. You know.
Yeah, and he promotes, and that's what they need.
Yeah.
So UFC Fight Night Poirier versus Pettis is this weekend. But before we get into that, Justin, I saw that you're trying to make, I guess, a kickboxing debut. You've got a GoFundMe page going on, and the amount of support you've gotten so far has been incredible. Your goal was 5,800. You put it up a couple days ago, and you're already at over 4,000. So good for you.
That's unreal.
I'm really fortunate. I have such an awesome community behind me in almost everything I do. And, you know, I try to do a lot in my city and for a lot of charities. And, I never really ask anything in return, and I never ask for help for myself. And someone convinced me to just do the GoFundMe page. And I was like, holy crap. Like, the money's one thing, but it's the comments and when people share my page. So, like, the people say about me, I'm like, oh, man, like, I don't even want to talk about it. It makes me misty, man. Like,
yeah. I can see why.
I'm so very fortunate to have this life and just to still be going. Like, I took 13 years off from any sort of competition, and someone's like, it was Joven, and he's like, come to Thailand, fight there. If you're going to do one more, come there. And I was like, I think that's ridiculous. And then about 2 days later, I was like, yo, I'm going to come to Thailand. I just got to figure out how to do it, right? Because flights are so much money that time of year, and training and time off work and away from my family. And it's not like you're actually getting paid for it. I just want to do one, you know?
Do you have a plan when you're there? Is there an area, a gym you're looking at?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go I'm honestly going to fly right in and get it done, like, before jet lag even settles. I'm just going to go, we're going to go up to Chiang Mai.
Nice.
And just compete there. As soon as I'm there, I'll get off the plane, sweat it out a bit, and go get it done.
And then chill and enjoy
time. And then they just go a couple days there, and then go to Phuket for a couple days. And
cool.
Sit on the beach.
It's got everything. Beach, it's got good parties, good training. I have never been.
I've either.
I'm pissed that I haven't been. Yeah. It's everyone looks at me, they think it's crazy that I haven't been.
Yeah.
You're a Muay Thai fighter, right?
Muay Thai. I have so many friends there and camps there that everyone's offered to take me around and house me at the gyms, but I just never jumped on and went.
It was never even on my radar, because when I was competitive in mixed martial arts, it didn't appeal to me. And then I kind of gave up on competing and training. So, like, for my travel, it wasn't to train or anything, you know? And I really only got into the kickboxing the last couple of years because guys like you and Kendall and Brendan Kalajundic, and I'm like, really, man, I start to, like, compare the kickboxing to the jiu-jitsu, like, learning how to set traps and angles. It's not just fist fighting, you know what
Absolutely.
I mean? And I really, really got into it. And then it's just through support from other people, they're like, go for it. I'm like, hell yeah, might as well. And then to see everyone get on board and help me out and all these different fundraisers, like, what you see online is like a small part of it.
Yeah.
Right.
I was blown away by it. And if I'm blown away by it, I can't imagine how you feel. I mean, it's been up for a couple days and you're already almost there.
No,
it's unbelievable.
I'm so fortunate. I'm like, that it's just the people around me. And like I said, this things, I don't view myself like that. When people are making these comments about how with a motivation I am, stuff like that, I don't see myself like that, right? So it's nice to hear, and it's yeah, so it's a shock. I'm like, yeah, I'm honored to have all this support. Like, even like these kids are sending me $10. I'm like, man,
yeah, I know.
Best. Like, it feels good, and I just want to go make everyone proud. You know.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I was blown away to see the support. It's good for you, and it goes to show that Bruckman's MMA is such a big staple in the community in Oshawa, Ontario. If you are out in Oshawa, you should go train with Justin and his great team. And you have something written on the wall there that I read about in another article?
I got lots of stuff written on the wall. You have to come
it's
visit.
It's our family. I don't remember. It's something in a different language.
It's Portuguese. It's minha equipa, minha familia. It's my team, my family. Yeah. And since I've trained with Shaw Franco and Silvio Baring, these guys 20 years ago, that's always been our go-to. And everybody that was, you know, all these guys, Monkey and everyone, Marco and all these
and
guys.
You guys are all still close,
Every single gym, we're all very successful in our careers. And every single gym that when you walk in, you'll see the same thing on their walls.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good for you, man. It's a real testament to how involved you are in the community and how much you've put in. So, you know, best of luck to you.
Thank you.
When you go over there, that's going to be fantastic. And now we'll move over to Poirier and Pettis, something a lot less consequential than the awesome things going on in your life. We've got Dustin Poirier, Anthony Pettis. Do you guys think that this is going to be the last chance Pettis has at getting a title run? We've seen how deep that division is. It's the lightweight division is crazy. It's kind of a mess right now also with Conor at the top. It's what do you guys think?
I think Pettis is same thing. I think he's on his way out. He was lighting so many guys up.
Oh, his striking was different level at one point.
And I think it's like anyone else. People kind of figured him out. And you change. You know, you make a little money. Maybe you don't. You're not as hungry. I'm not really sure. But he's definitely not the same as he was 4 years ago. And Poirier, he's a grinder. He's always dangerous. So it potential for a quick fight or a real long grinder, right?
Yeah. I think we forget how young Pettis is. I think he's like maybe 30 only this time.
Yeah, like that.
You never know. He could turn it around. All it takes is a good camp or two and some good momentum, and you can turn it around.
I'm
not ready to write him off just yet. I think we need to, you know, take a step back, look at Pettis. I mean, he did a good job against Jim Miller, and Jim Miller's an elder statesman of the sport. Mm-hmm. This, I think, is the real litmus test. Like, if he's able to beat Poirier, I think he's right back in the mix.
See if he can hang at this level still, right? I think that's the big test. And he hasn't had great performances, but I know Pettis is awesome, well-trained with Duke Rufus.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we forget. He was supposed to be fighting for a title less than a year ago when he was fighting Holloway in Toronto. I mean, he didn't make weight, so he moved back up to 155.
He is always one solid kick away from her.
Right.
Like, he is dangerous all the time.
He's good off his back. Yeah, he can really do it all. So looking forward to that one. And also the swan song for Matt Brown. He says this is going to be his last fight. Do you think that there's a certain peace that comes with guys saying, you know, this is it for me when you're going into a fight? Or do you think you have a foot out the door?
Well, I think he knows, which I saw Matt Brown the other day at a Glory event. He had a fighter actually was cornering in Glory. I don't know. I think he's taking more of a coaching role now, which would probably be good for him.
TJ, so he
already
he
knows.
TJ.
He understands.
TJ
so he understands he's on his way out. I think it's a right time. I mean, for him too, and I don't want to judge, but I mean, now that I understand brain injuries in this sport, It's the time for him. After speaking with him, seeing what he's been through, it's
his
time
style
for him.
Is a hard one.
Yeah, balls to the wall all the time. Yeah.
But at the same time,
his opponent,
Sanchez might have probably should have retired.
Yeah, he's the one that should be done.
Ultimate Fighter 1 veteran.
Yeah, and you know what? I think I love a guy that says no, this is it, and he can walk away. But can you stay away? It's hard, man. Like, you know, you wake up every day dreaming about it. I know you do.
Oh, yeah. That's why I started doing jiu-jitsu. I told the first thing to Justin, I said, I'm doing the Justin Bruckman. I did jiu-jitsu yesterday. I'm coming. And then as soon as I roll and I get competitive, and it's like, next thing you know, here I go. My first tournament. Then I'm going to my first traveling tour.
I just
want
you at my place, man, because payback's a bitch.
So. I'm coming. I'm going to wait a little bit.
Joe's not the right guy to challenge, I don't think.
Like I told you, my
Joe likes to prove people wrong.
Oh, my brother-in-law, Justin's, you know, good friends growing up. They fought together on those UCC days. He used to bully me and pick on me in jiu-jitsu. I said, I got you in striking. I said, whether you're 80 and whether you're 90 and I'm 80, I'm going to tap you out one day, buddy. So, I'll take my licks now, Justin, but I'm coming.
All right.
You got a few years on me, so.
Yeah.
A couple other interesting things from this weekend's card. We've got Sage Northcutt back in action. And Tatiana Suarez, she's someone to watch. Are you familiar with her, Joe?
I mean, not too
she's
much
kind of a
her.
Deep cut because she was on Ultimate Fighter 23, rather, and she won. Fantastic wrestler. Probably the best wrestler at strawweight already. and she's only fought once in the UFC. Big, big freestyle wrestling background. Definitely worth watching, and I think she's got a really bright future in the sport. And I actually think the best fight on this card is the headliner for the prelims, which is Dodson versus Marlon Moraes.
Yeah,
that's a hell of a bantamweight fight.
Yeah, no, Dodson's been, what was he, a two-time title contender?
Yeah,
just never was able to
beat
crack.
Dillashaw in the Ultimate Fighter finale.
Yeah, like, I mean, he's got the talent to still do well.
Yeah,
especially on that prelim card. I got to give a shout-out to my one of my friends, Angela Hill.
Yeah.
So she had a tough little road. You're talking about a kickboxer who went into MMA, did the Ultimate Fighter, she fought Carla Esparza.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
She ends up getting losing. She had no MMA experience, so they kicked her out of the UFC, goes to Invicta, wins the Invicta belt.
Well, she lost a couple more times before they canned her.
She lost a couple, but she ended up coming back, doing well, and now she's making a good little career.
And then they threw her to Andrade in her first fight back, and that was one of the best women's fights ever.
Yeah, she did.
Great fight.
She got submitted, didn't she?
Against Andrade? No, I think she lost by decision. Either a decision or like a third round loss. I can't
she
remember.
She lost to Rose, I know, by rear naked choke. But so she's fought all the top girls. So give the girls some credit. So hopefully Angela Hill makes her way back up.
And she's fighting Amanda Nunes' fiance, Nina Ansaroff. So that should be interesting. So we made our picks last week, Joe.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately lost. I went for a Hail Mary for Alexei Oleinik. I'm starting to get into panic mode.
Now you're panicking. You know, with some favorites, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I asked you before if parlays were cool. So I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to parlay Tatiana Suarez and Carl Roberson.
We don't know the odds. Did you check the odds yet?
I've got it on the last page of our booklets. I've got a little cheat sheet prepared for you. So I'm going to go with those two. It's together.
So
it's
doing
about
two fight parlay
plus 117. You can, or you can just go straight, whatever you want.
Oh my boy,
Justin!
Carl,
if you want to make a guest
too.
Pick, feel free. Who was I guess Jorge Masvidal was Robin's pick, and he bet all $100.
Yeah, he
of his
put
dollars.
All.
He's
yeah.
out. He's out
he's
now.
Out, yeah.
He's out. So I'm at $80 right now, and you're at $107. I would say $107. Yeah.
All right. So we're doing two fights.
You can if you want, or you can just pick one. If you want a parlay, I'm doing a two-fight parlay.
Oh, you're doing
parlay.
A parlay to try to make up some time. All right.
Yeah, so it goes to even money instead of me having to put a lot of juice on Tatiana Suarez. So I'm putting her together with Carl Roberson.
Oh, my guy, Carl.
Yeah.
I called two of his fights in glory. That's the talk about quick Carl Roberson there. That guy fights anyone, anytime. Just tough, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad he did well in that Contender Series to see someone like that.
See how it translates. There was a nice underdog pick that I liked too, but I ended up just going with this one.
All right, Justin, you're up, buddy. I need a few more seconds, bro. I'm putting you under the gun.
I don't gamble with my money, only my safety. So, but I tell you one fight: John Dodson versus Marlon. So, this fight's gonna be fun for me to watch because one of my fighters, Bill Bolin, defeated John Dodson.
Really?
Yeah, really? Wow.
Bill came by my gym the other day.
And as well, Marlon, one of my training partners, Josh Hill, actually defeated Marlon as well.
Ah, that's so right. They fought World Series of Fighting.
The
main event.
Yeah.
They fought
lost
twice.
Hill lost
the name.
The first fight was incredible.
I think Hill lost to him both times, didn't he? Didn't Hill lose to him both times?
I think they went 1-1.
They won
they?
1-1. He got knocked out the second time.
Yeah.
No, I thought he won the second time.
He lost
time.
Both. He lost
no?
both.
No, he
times.
Lost both. He lost the first times. One. It was like split or it was close.
It was a really tight fight.
He got caught. He got caught in the second.
Hill, I think, did better against Moraes than anybody else did until Moraes went to the UFC. He lost to a Sunsau, and strangely, a Sunsau is fighting a worse opponent than Moraes. He's fighting Matthew Lopez. No disrespect to Matthew, a great fighter in his own right, but Dodson's probably, I would say, a much tougher opponent.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, and a Sunsau beat Moraes.
I'm still trying to make my bets here. Okay, I'm going to do a parlay.
All right, let's go.
I'm going to go Anthony Pettis.
Okay.
Can I do a three fight?
If you want to, sure.
Let's have some fun. Pettis, Matt Brown, and my third pick, I'm going to go with my girl, Angela Hill.
Okay, well, we'll work out the odds for that. And,
it's a three fight.
Yeah,
so,
they're all favorites.
We didn't pick any underdogs this time.
Yeah, no underdogs this
time. If you had an underdog pick, what would you go with? So if I
like Jake Collier as an underdog at plus 180 against Marcel Fortuna. I think Collier is a very, very skilled fighter. He's been on and off in the UFC, but he's a guy that I think he's moved up to light heavyweight now, and I think that's a good division for him because he was a very big middleweight.
Okay. I might, when I'm putting my bets in this week, I'll put that in.
Okay, well, I've told you, I'm terrible at this, so you might not want to go with what I have to say.
There's a lot of fun. Like,
yeah.
Lozon
Guida
is a great fighter.
I don't mind watching Court McGee.
Yeah.
Joe Lozon, Clay Guida, we never even talked about that
fight. That's a fun fight. Yeah.
Who wins that one?
I'm going to go Lozon, man.
Me too.
I don't know. Guida's been a different fighter since he's been a Team Alpha Male. He's looked really good. So I don't know. That's a tough one to call.
Clay can pull out a UD.
Because Guida's really good.
Sure.
Like, Lozon's a tricky guy.
Incredible
jiu-jitsu. But so is Guida. Guida from top, he's a tricky guy. He knows what he's doing. He's not going to get put in precarious positions.
And he's not going to gas, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely not going to gas. He never does.
Andre Arlovski?
Arlovski's lost 5 in a row. And now he's fighting Junior. They're throwing him to the wolves.
Nate Marquardt, another old-timer coming back in.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun fight against Fajeja.
That's the guy. Did he win the Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah,
Brazil?
Fajeja won Tough Brazil, the first one. So it's a really good card. I think it's worth watching. It's going to be on TSN, so make sure you tune into that. Justin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Where can they find some information about you?
You can check out BruckmanMartialArts.com.
Bruckman with two N's.
Yep. Bruckman MMA on Instagram, or follow Justin Bruckman on Facebook because he's just funny as
I agree.
And do you have a Twitter account or no?
I do not.
Okay. I saw you started one years ago. But you haven't updated
in 5 years.
I ran
away from that. Twitter's too much work, man. I'm only funny in person.
All right. Well, thanks, Justin. We appreciate you joining us.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Awesome, second buddy. Person that George St. Pierre ever fought. George St. Pierre with a massive comeback. Exciting to see what's next for him. And thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with more TSN MMA show here on TSN Radio and the TSN Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.